Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. Then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening and happy Shabbat. I'm going to speak of nothing in the news other than to speak on a quick story that Steve, who goes by Bloodbath here in the chat room, brought up to me earlier in this week. Those in the chat room have probably read this. We had another show that was flagged by the Thought Police. The first show that was flagged by the Thought Police was flagged because they said that we violated their policy on vaccines. Now, the fact of the matter is, exceedingly pro-vaccine, and all we did is explain that the anti-vaxxers are making a foolish decision with their own lives and their loved ones. So you have to be a moron to have flagged our show on your vaccine policy when we are anti-conspiracy and pro-vaccine, and we're unrelenting in that regard and have never changed in that regard. This time it was election tampering. But the election that I would assume that we were tampering with is one that we didn't vote in, because we really don't care who wins election. We're anti-political. So first of all, we don't take sides. Second is the election had taken place 7 months previously. So it's pretty hard to tamper with an election that has already transpired by 7 months. The third thing is that the person who I mentioned was a story that I picked up from the mainstream media. It was all over the mainstream media, so I just cited the mainstream media. But the person I mentioned, to my knowledge, has never run for office. So how that becomes election tampering. Genuinely, we are dealing with people who are completely irrational in the New Thought Police dealing with America. So I apologize. We have this tendency to try to isolate Facebook because Facebook is so liberal. The founder of Facebook, who actually founded his company, by doing what would get you in jail today and would be considered the ultimate no-no among liberals, he shamed women. I mean, would you do this woman, or how ugly is she, or how doable is she? And it was a way of just taking images of women that went to the university and treating them like a piece of meat. So that's how Facebook was started. And so it's easy to pick on them, but this is on YouTube, and YouTube, best of my understanding, is owned by Google, which is Alphabet. So obviously, Larry Page, who's who lives just a stone's throw from where I am here, has not left very smart people responsible for his content. That'll be enough. That'll be enough news today. I don't even think we dropped a name. Therefore, we ought to be free of the thought police. Let's. Maybe there's going to be a moratorium one of these days on Yeshayahu, Isaiah. I don't know. Maybe he's done something that gets him. You know, Dr. Seuss, I had always thought was a pretty squared away guy. One of my favorites growing up. But I can see one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish could be indeed a...
how dare you.
Yeah, how dare you. So,
well, if you go from verse 10 to 17 in the passage we're about to go to, I translated every key word. And yep. I'm telling you, you could have been a lot rougher. Yah was really mad. He don't pull any punches on what we're about to do.
There were two reasons we turned to this. One of them was selfish for all of us. I guess it's not selfish if it's something Yahweh wants. There's a passage in here that we covered several weeks ago, where God essentially says that He is so pleased with what we have all been doing, that when he meets with the children of the covenant for the first time, he is going to acknowledge all of our contributions, that he's going to actually say, I want to show some appreciation because many of you are here because, you know, they work so hard at trying to share my message, and I want to acknowledge them. And, you know, our first response, of course, is, you know, please don't do that. We just like to be a fly in the back of the wall. I mean, come on, happy to be there. Please don't embarrass us this way. But then, you know, the reason we brought it up was that it's so Yah. No dad is going to let one of their kids do something that they think is important and that had some value and not acknowledge it. And to say to dad, I'm sorry, you can't do that, would be actually selfish. So we shared it because it spoke volumes about the nature of our Heavenly Father. It's just who he is. You know, he likes working through people. He doesn't seem to get frustrated that we aren't really up to speed in a lot of things. But, you know... He likes working. It's just the whole thing is he enjoys our company, likes working through us, and so when we do something that's worthwhile, and I'm here to tell you, looking at these the new editions of these books, and there's 19 or 20 of them that we've completed thus far, that the team has worked on, and the website now that is showing them, I think we do have something that I was pleased with. The message is strong. It's directed correctly at his people.
Beautiful presentation.
It's a beautiful presentation and an exceedingly effective message. So that was part of it. The other part of it was that starting at this point in Yeshayah, God becomes more hostile to Judaism than anything we have experienced thus far. Now, Yeshayah begins in chapters 1 through 10, and it is all anti-Judaism. 11, of course, is on the Choder, and then God shows both positive and negative for a little while after that. But by the time you get to where we are now, which is Yeshayah 57:10 for the next 10 statements. It is no holds barred. God is exceedingly disgusted by rabbinic Judaism. And that's what we're going to read. And I have no problem having these translations challenged, because I think the more you challenge them, the more it's going to reinforce that the religion God hates the most isn't Christianity, though he despises it. He calls it the plague of death. It isn't Islam, though he despises it, because in Islam, Allah is Satan. And both of those religions have sought to malign and murder the chosen people. The religion he hates the most is Judaism. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One is, of course, the religion that's had the most negative effect on the chosen people is not Islam or Christianity. It's Judaism. It has separated virtually every Jew from Yahweh for a better part of 3,000 years.
Yeah, it stands to reason, though.
Yeah, so, and the next thing is, they were his witnesses. God spoke to the world in their language through their ancestors. And yet they rejected it, and they not only rejected it and came up with their Talmud, but these jerks called their Talmud the Torah.
Hmm.
And the first thing they did is remove his name. Oh, he's God's
bad move.
Livid. If you are a religious Jew, you need to know God hates you. But most religious Jews probably already know that. With the variation and the duration of your long rabbinical journey, your ways have become wearisome. But you have never admitted it is hopeless. With the variation and the duration of your long rabbinical journey, your ways were wearisome. They required the expenditure of considerable effort, but you never admitted hopeless. Reinvigorated, you expressed your influence such that you did not show any weakness, so that you did not appear the least bit grieved. This is Yeshayah, Isaiah 57:10. The words are bar rob, which is the basis of rabbi, and your ways, Derek Ath. Wearisome is from Yaga, but you never admitted Lo Amar. It is hopeless, Yarash. Reinvigorated is from Chaya. You expressed is from Matza. Your influence is from Yad Ata, such that you did not show weakness is from Al Ken Lo Chala. What part of that should be rendered a different way?
Nothing. I mean, it's just it hits it. It's just it's also disease. Some of these words are disease, which brings up Paul's diatribe. It's just plague of death. It's certainly will kill you. It's despair. Yarash is despair. It's a really simple thing. If anyone's not sure, just to go through a simple little. Some program that has a interlinear, and you look these up, and there's no fight over what these words mean in the interlinears or any of the lexicons. I mean, they're right on the money. It's not hard.
No. In fact, you mentioned Paul. Well,
yeah.
God is lambasting Judaism here, not Christianity.
Well, I know, but
you mentioned Paul. Had it not been for rabbinic Judaism, Paul would never have written a single book, given a single speech, made any claim.
That's true.
The thing that made Paul an effective deceiver was that he had been schooled in rabbinic Judaism, so he knew these passages well enough to misappropriate them and misquote them. He knew Judaism well enough
get away with it,
to attack it. And so had the rabbis not taught this guy, there would have been no Christianity, because without Paul, there is no Christianity. And think of how different the world would have been if after Imperial Rome, there wasn't the Roman Catholic Church, because the oppression of the chosen people by the Roman Catholic Church has been so gruesome and so unrelenting, and it never would have occurred had it not been for Rabbinic Judaism. There have been countless variations of Judaism, as rabbis have added their personal pronouncements to the pile of manure which preceded them. The notion that the Talmud is an alternative Torah, dating back to the time of Moshe, is, to use the Irish term for such things, malarkey. The preponderance of the Talmud was compiled in Babylon around 500 CE. The Rambam, Rabbi Moshe ben Mamon, or Maimonides as he is called, was a converso Muslim, and he codified his Talmudic law in his 14-volume Mishnah Torah in the 12th century. The Zohar was written in a cryptic and obscure style of Aramaic used exclusively by rabbis in the late Middle Ages. The first appeared in Spain, and not until the 13th century when it was published by Rabbi Moshe de Leon. To garner undeserved credibility, de Leon falsely credited the book to Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, a disciple of Rabbi Akiba, who was the most nefarious of Jews for having brought the wrath of Rome upon Judea while promoting a false Messiah. And because of his promotion of a false Messiah, Yisrael, as Yehuda, was renamed Philistia, causing the problems that we're witnessing today. The Jews were hauled off into slavery. The temple was destroyed. The proceeds were used to build the Colosseum, which was a theater to death. And we began the diaspora. All of that can be laid right to the feet of the man that Rabbinic Judaism credits as being the father of their religion. It's interesting, I did not mention the Jerusalem Talmud because it isn't well regarded, even among Rabbinic Jews. And it's because it's so poorly written. It's so incomplete. So they really begin with the Babylonian Talmud, which is what they call the Torah. Now, in addition, it is important to know, after we mention these infamous rabbis, that Hadithic Judaism, which is the ultra-Orthodox variety, it's even a more modern phenomenon. It was conceived in Poland in the 1700s. It was promoted by a guy that wrote almost nothing. His name was Baal Shem Tov, Lord of the Good Name, also known as Rabbi Israel ben Eliezer.
But Baal.
As a result, Hadithic Jews, it's stunning. These guys it's amazing that people this stupid can be, and they're worshipped. They are worshipped, The God of Rabbinic Judaism are many.
Named after Satan.
They are rabbis. Rabbis. Rabbis are the ones that they worship. So Jews, as a result, remain in the 18th century unable to progress or to extricate themselves from that time. You know, I looked up because I wanted to see, when did these guys start wearing those stupid black mourning suits? When did they start wearing the weasel hats? When did that all occur? And you know what I found out? around the 1940s and the 1950s.
I didn't
know this idea
that, I mean,
that rabbinic Judaism is old. No. 1700s, 1800s, 1900s. Not old at all. That's why I said there's so many of it, as it evolves with whoever the next popular rabbi is. And they do pilgrimages on their holy days to rabbis in places like the Ukraine, for example. The men and boys in the mourning suits that were stampeded in Israel, the biggest peacetime death toll, I think, in Israel's history, they were actually celebrating the death of the rabbi who was falsely, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the rabbi who was falsely attributed as the author of the Zohar. They were doing their bobbing up and down and their swaying back and forth, and they actually look like Pentecostals, but in mourning suits. Even like I watched an Orthodox wedding, because the women are so badly abused and they're made to shave their heads to take their dignity. They have no rights from that point on. And the men, while they're doing it, are sitting there bobbing their heads up and down. They just can't stop doing it. I got a brain in there. I know it's somewhere. There's a brain in there. Come on. Where is it? Where did I lose it? Well, anyway,
like
Israel.
A little bird that dunks in the beak in the water.
These are your assassins. The five Jews I just mentioned, they are the most deadly of all Jews. If Yahweh had a most wanted list, I'd add the wannabe Rabbi Shaul Paul of New Testament infamy, and then Muhammad of Quranic pain. But those are stories for another time. With life becoming more miserable for Jews, with surviving religious and political oppression, with the rise of anti-Semitism, with this all becoming more debilitating, why is it that no one has stood up against the rabbis to announce the obvious? This is not working. With every word the rabbis wrote, with every deception that flowed from their poison pens, no one ever admitted this is futile. In fact, it has been counterproductive, a self-inflicted wound, and God's question still lingers.
Yes.
There isn't a single Jew out there saying, I'm sorry, this has been an abject failure. Why don't we try something else? Why don't we do the Hezekiah thing? The religion thing is obviously pissing God off.
Isn't that the first line you read? But he never admitted it's hopeless?
Yes. Why not?
Yeah.
As Stockholm children, religious Jews have redoubled their efforts. They have not wearied of being played by their own. Instead, Jews have rallied around their rabbis, clinging to them for advice, worshiping them, when they were actually the very reason the people were suffering, separated from their land, separated from their God. Religious Jews, particularly the leaders, are going to spend eternity in Sheol because they have committed the unforgivable sin. They have led souls away from Yahweh to gods bearing other titles and names. This prophetic proclamation from Yahweh's lips to rabbinic ears is among the saddest we have encountered. God says to the rabbis and to those who believe them, what did you find so troubling that you were afraid of me? What was so wearisome and concerning that you did not respect me, such that you became deceptive in so many ways? You have become proven liars, weaving your delusions on behalf of a false God. Your opinions are all wrong about God. What you write and say is counter to reality. You are worshiping something that is not real, only imagined. You have not thought about these things, nor have you been inclined to be associated with me. And you have not mentioned me because you do not even remember who I am. I have been neglected, or have I been neglected, because I have been silent? Have I been eliminated and nullified for not responding to you? Has it been so long that you no longer respect me and are now actually against me? That's Yashaya 57:11. Kirk, when I translated that, my first reaction was, they carry this around in their Tanakh.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, Yashaya is like, you know, he's not obscure.
No, he's in the building in downtown.
Yeah, yeah. He is the most prominent of the prophets.
Yeah, I think so.
He really is. He happens to be my favorite prophet. Yahweh says that, you know, that he has a special relationship with Moshe, and I get that, as a prophet, because he did so much to lead the people out of Mitzrayim, the crucibles of religious and political oppression. And so I can appreciate Yahweh's unique viewpoint on Moshe, but if you were to total all of Moshe's prophecies together, they would equal maybe 10% of the prophecies contained in Yashaya. So Moshe was an extraordinary man and did some extraordinary things, and he was the ultimate prophet if you view prophecy as God does, which is prophecy is past and future. So, you know, by telling the story of creation, of the flood, of the relationship with Abraham and how it developed, and then with Yishak and with Jacob, and then what caused the children of Israel to go into Egypt, and then tell that story of their release and their deliverance being withdrawn, and presenting the Torah to us, okay, Moshe's extraordinary. I have no issue with that.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, the prophet's prophet is Yashaya, Isaiah. Now, we only have one complete prophetic scroll. Mm-hmm. It happens to be the longest, the most prolific of the prophets, Yashaya.
Mm-hmm.
There is a shrine to that scroll. And yet it says this, God says this as bluntly as he can about Judaism, and they pay no attention. They go about their religion as if they're doing some service to God. And yet God says, what did you find so troubling that you were afraid of me, such that you became deceptive in so many ways and have become proven liars, weaving your delusions on behalf of a false God? You have not thought about these things, nor have you been inclined to be associated with me, and you don't even mention me. Fact is, you don't even remember who I am. I have been negated because I have been silent. Is that why you've eliminated and nullified me, because I didn't respond to you? Has it been so long? You do not respect me or are now against me? Well, the answer to the first question is rather simple. God had no use for rabbis. He only mentions them mm-hmm. to condemn them. So the rabbis created a different God by a different designation in a different Torah, which is actually the Talmud, to replace Yahweh. They needed a God who would support their lust for power. So they made up their own. There is no room for religion, no opportunity to get rich deceiving the people in the Torah. Therefore, rabbis substituted their Talmud. You know, I was translating a passage yesterday morning, Kirk, and it was in relation to Sukkah. It's interesting that Yeshaya, my favorite prophet, has a lot to say about Sukkah. And so I was translating those, and then I went back to the first time and the second time that Sukkah is mentioned in the Torah. And it speaks the second time that it is mentioned. The first time is in conjunction with Yaakov, and it tells the whole story of Sukkah. The Mikra of Sukkah is told in that story about Yaakov, and we'll eventually get there. And then the second time that God mentions it, and it's he speaks of it as an arrival in Sukkot. The only difference between Sukkah and Sukkot is that it's plural. So in that presentation, and this is a matter of days before the Torah is revealed, the Yahweh reveals his Torah to Moshe. God says, there's only going to be one Torah. Only one, Ichad. One Torah for you, one Torah for the Goyim. Just one. That's all they're going to be. One Torah. So how in the hell did these buffoons claim that there was a second Torah handed down orally to the elders of Yisrael and then magically passed on to them, just shy of 2,000 years later? If there's only one Torah and God says there's only going to be one Torah before there was any Torah, how do you claim there's two? Unless the Torah that was put in writing is false. But if the Torah that is put in writing is false, your Torah, which you claim was delivered at the same time and via the same God through the same people, it's false.
Mm-hmm.
Game over.
Yeah.
I mean,
same
how
argument
can these people
yeah.
have a higher IQ than the average human and be that stupid? Well, I can tell you why.
I've been asking that all week.
Oh, no. The answer is exceedingly straightforward. God said, in essence, that you guys are so destructive. You're so harmful. You're so abusive of our relationship, of me, of my name, of my plan, of my prophets, of my Torah, of my covenant, that if I blind you such that you don't understand any of it, at least you will not be condemning and corrupting the truth.
Yeah.
Therefore, the truth will still be available. So they just have to bypass you and they can find the truth. But if I don't blind you, if I don't make it so that you are too dumb to understand, then you're going to so screw things up that no one will ever find it. So that's half of it.
Yeah.
God deliberately says, I am making you stupid. You're not going to get any of this because when you deal with it, you misappropriate everything, you twist everything, you eliminate my name, you eliminate my chag, my moed.
Change the letters and how to pronounce them.
The two most important moed by far. Now, there's really only two ultimately there's two moed that make all the difference in the world. Because I'm here to tell you, Pesach without matzah is really counterproductive.
Got nothing.
God says that chag matzah is it. I mean, he goes on every positive term that Yahweh can throw at something, he throws at chag matzah, the mikra of matzah. And the fact is that Pesach and Bukurim are incorporated into Chag Matzah. Why am I telling you this story? Because religious Jews celebrate Passover. They do not celebrate. They do not observe. They do not speak of matzah. Matzah is relegated to an ingredient during Pesach. Nothing more. That's how bad these idiots have become. And the next most important day to a an ethnic Jew is Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliation. And what did they do? They turned this celebration of the reunion of the family where Yisrael and Yehudah are reunited with Yahweh, they turned it in to a pain in the ass as a time to afflict themselves, to abuse themselves. The reunion with God is so abhorrent to rabbis that the day that it occurs is the single most depraved, debilitating, disgusting day of the year. It's the day they abuse themselves because they know the reunion with Yahweh is, it's lights out for Rabbinic Judaism. It's over. And they will take the entire ethnicity down with them. But that just shows you how wrong they are. There is nothing in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms more important than Yahweh's name. What did they eliminate from their religion?
His name.
Yahweh's name. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can't do worse than that.
And no, he says he's
what does Yahweh say about the Torah? Not only is there only one of them, he says, don't add to it.
No.
What did they do? You look at a rabbi, he's got a wall of add to it. So I'm telling you, folks, you may think that we're being we called all sorts of names, like anti-Shemites for attacking rabbinic Judaism. But by the way, anti-Shemite means against the name. We love the name Yahweh. And by the way, we love Yehudah. We love Yehudah. And we're doing this because we love Yehudah. I only wish there were more of them. Because what rabbis have done to you is they've taken the Yehudim out of you. They have rendered all of you Jews such that there isn't a Yehudim in the midst, not one of you, other than those who have come this way via these writings through the covenant. Because to be a Yehudim, to be a Yehud, is to be beloved of Yah. And you can't be beloved of Yah if you won't even say his name.
My children know my name. They shout it from the
rooftop. Yes, rendering what should have been and would have been Yehudim, Jews, the void of the name. Fact is, as we said, there's no room to get rich deceiving people in the Torah. Therefore, rabbis have substituted everything in the creation of their Talmud. Rabbis have been deceptive in so many ways that it is obvious to everyone who reads the Torah and prophets that Judaism is counter to reality. It's filled with unsubstantiated opinions and wild imaginings. To believe them is to be deluded. That is God's conclusion. You can form your own. Claiming to speak for God, pretending that they are the only qualified individuals to study the words of Hashem. And actually, the rabbis have not given Yahweh a second thought.
No, they don't study.
They aren't the least bit inclined to consider anything meaningful about Yahweh. Rabbis say nothing of Yahweh because they do not know who he is. If that sounds too harsh, you and blame me if you'd like. But I'm conveying Yahweh's sentiments. There is no mention of Yahweh anywhere in the vast array of rabbinic writings, not in the Talmud, not in the Mishneh Torah, nor in the Zohar, nor in any of the recent drivel attributed to Baal Shem Tov. The rabbis have left a written legacy, one dating back 2,000 years, one which has been continually updated by their ilk, providing absolute proof that they have not thought about, that they have not been inclined to be associated with, and that they have not so much as mentioned Yahweh even once. Should you disagree? Prove God a liar. But good luck with that. Because this prophetic statement, like every other, was, and it remains, accurate. There is no rabbi today, nor has there ever been one, who knows or speaks the truth about Yahweh. Now, I didn't give you an opportunity to speak on the words of Yeshayah 57:1, but or 57:11.
Right.
Is there anything there that you found that was particularly either insightful or that maybe I missed or got wrong?
No, you didn't really miss anything. He called them really nasty, ongoing liars and stuff like that. So I mean, it's where. Well, yeah, I mean, you could have written five more paragraphs on the same, you know, the same verse. It's just that because we have so many English words to convey. But if you really think about what it all comes down to, I mean, he is really being vicious. I mean, he just can't stand it. But I did want to say the reason we love Yeshayah scroll so much, that's the prophecy for this time.
It is.
He told him, he said, don't worry, this is going to come to fruition at a time later. Just watch and wait, you know. And
yes.
That's why we embrace it, because it is for now to do this very thing. He wrote these words, and there was no rabbi to holler at.
Yeah.
I mean,
first of all,
stuff or
it's clear that Yeshayah understood
mm-hmm.
Yahweh's love for Dod. He gets
yes.
Dod right.
Yes.
He understands the concept of Zeruah and who are the Zeruah.
Mm-hmm.
He clearly gets the fact that Dod is the one who is returning. He
Certainly.
Is in love with Yahweh's name. He is fixated on the covenant and on the Torah. Yeshayah knows. His intellect is superb. He is brilliant as a wordsmith. And Yahweh allows his prophets to interject their terminology and their insights into his testimony, because he doesn't use them as robots. He picked this
mm-hmm.
man for a reason. This is an extraordinary individual. And what we have learned about Yeshayah is that during his lifetime, not a single person capitalized on his message. Here is the greatest of the prophets living in your hometown, speaking your language, and not a single person capitalized. But it's worse than that. Yeshayah was able to go forward in time, and for the next 2,000 years, no one capitalized. No one. And finally, Yahweh said, hey, man, don't sweat it. It's all cool. It's all going to be good. You know, what you wrote is going to matter. It's going to make all the difference in the world. Here, I'm going to show you how what you have written is going to transform my people in the end and play the leading role in bringing them back home. And he did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we find so much of what we're doing incorporated into the prophet's presentation, because what we are doing is God's way to tell Yeshayah, hey, man, you're the best. What you're doing matters. Don't feel badly about it. celebrate it. Look how your prophecy is going to be used to bring my people home. So you're right. We do fixate
embrace
to a large degree on Yahshua's every time we turn to
him.
He's the key. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to tease on it, but I'm just not going to do it. There is a prophecy further down the line, right towards the end of Yahshua, where we are mentioned again, and in a way that is it's so riveting that I've shared it with, because it was brought to my attention, I didn't find it, and I've shared it with two or three people, and I said, listen, I can't even deal with this at this point and time, to which they're, I think, a little miffed at me, because I've always said, I'll go where the words lead. Well, this went to a place that was more than I could handle. Yeah, more than I'm ready for. And I guess we'll get there one day, but I can tell you that what we are doing is not only important to Yahweh. It's not only important to the Yehudim and the Yisraelites that will ultimately capitalize upon Yom Kippurim. It was important to this man. It was important to Yahshua. So the answer to the second question that God is posing is found in the first rabbis, where they were able to neglect and actually nullify Yahweh along with their brethren, because God has remained silent for so long. It's been 2,400 years since the word of Yahweh was conveyed through a prophet. 2,700 years since Yahshua spoke to Yahweh's people, but 2,400 years since there was a prophet. I'm not sure if it's Malachi or Zechariah. There's some evidence that either one. I personally lean towards Malachi being the last of the prophets. And I love the fact that God ends by telling you, you know, that I'm going to bring Eliyah back. We think that Yahshua is giving them both barrels. Malachi is even harsher on them. But God says, we're still going to get this thing resolved, and I'm going to give you, in the end, Malachi.
Everybody gets a shot.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to give you Eliyah. I'm trying to figure out, so why Eliyah? Okay, I think Eliyah is the best because I love sarcasm. I love a guy that's got chutzpah, that's got the courage to give them both barrels. So, personally, I like the dude. But he wasn't much of a prophet. He really wasn't much of a prophet. There's no book of Eliyah out there, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
If I were to ask you, could you please list the top 10 prophecies that were shared by Eliyah?
I think
I'd have even the most dedicated Torah and prophet scholars scratching their head. That wasn't Eliyah's role. Eliyah's role was to expose and condemn religion and politics. And he did that better than anyone in history. And in fact, he did it with such style, with such humor, with such biting words, that Yahweh said, okay, hey, you're good. I am not going to waste you on these backwater bozos. If back here, I'm going to bring you to prime time when it really counts. I'm bringing you back because, man, I think you're funny. In the midst of all this, I need a laugh. And, dude, I'd pay for admission. You're good. So I think, firstly, I think that's why Eliyah is being brought back.
Nobody gets a double take. You know, that's pretty cool.
Eliyah is so funny.
Encore.
Yeah. So rabbis were able to neglect and negate actually nullify Yahweh among their brethren because God has remained silent for so long. In 2,400 years since Yahweh conveyed anything through a prophet. Now, somebody might say, well, Yosha was a prophet. Nah, not really. Not really. I don't think there may be very little to nothing that Yosha said that wasn't already in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. You know,
correct.
Okay, we on this program cite the prophet Yashaya. That does not make us prophets. And when Yosha cited something that Yashaya said, it did not make him a prophet. It made him like us. Someone who is,
reporting the facts.
And, right. And the other problem is we don't have all of Yahweh's prophets had something in common. They wrote.
In Hebrew.
Yeah, there's not a single word that we have written by the hand of Yosha. So then, okay, so they would say, all right, well, Yahweh Khan in the whole book of Revelation. Well, not so much. No, because
parts of
Revelation that are actually credible, all the parts that are credible, come right out of Zechariah and out of Ezekiel and out of Daniel and out of Yirmiyah. It's not a whole lot different than what we're doing here.
Yeah.
Where we're taking this prophet and that prophet and the other prophet and saying they're all telling the same story and this is the story. So you really have, therefore, 2,400 years of radio silence. I've got nothing against Yahweh Khanan. He may have been a cool dude, but Yahweh Khanan does not write like a prophet. The prophet says, Yahweh said. You know, one of our challenges in presenting a book like Yashaya and Jackie and Molly, who are my my quote smiths, they're constantly saying, do we close the quote here? We open it here. Who's speaking? Is it the prophet that's speaking now, or is it Yahweh that is still speaking? Because sometimes it's hard to tell because there's so much of Yahweh speaking in first person. And Yahweh will even speak in first person, but use his name in third person while he's speaking in first person. So there is nothing in Revelation that reads like the any of the prophets. So it's real, and it wasn't written in Hebrew. So we realize it's been 2,400 years since Yahweh communicated through a prophet. And the reason is simple. And the reason is simple, folks. There was no one willing to serve Yahweh in the role of a Nabi. Not one. And as a result, the rabbis, as the result of these rabbis, the Jews were led so far away from Yahweh that none were willing to listen to him anymore. Without a Nabi, there would be no new revelations, just the fulfillment.
Well, nobody would stand up against the rabbis till now.
Correct. Yes, rabbinic Judaism.
Nobody would dare. It wouldn't dare.
The only thing that you see in opposition to rabbinic Judaism in Israel is that the non-ultra-Orthodox, the non-Hasidic, will jab the rabbinic Judaism arm and say, you know, you are so disparaging of us that an Orthodox Jew will say that a Reformed Jew is not even a Jew, and they will speak of them as being, you know, dogs and snakes and all sorts of matters. They're exceedingly derogatory, and so everyone from Reformed to the left of that, and who is secular, is upset that, you know, the Hasidic despise the nation of Israel. I mean, half of them live there. They cash a check from the government so they can play religion all day, and yet they condemn the state. They hate the state of Israel and openly hostile to it. And they don't serve in the IDF. They won't lift a finger to fight They don't pay taxes. They spend all day being parasites. And so there are people who speak out against that. They say, you know, if you want to be religious, go do whatever you want to do. We don't give a crap. But we don't want to have to pay for you being religious all day.
That's your choice.
Yeah, that's your choice. But, you know, in Israel, you can't get married and you can't get divorced outside of a rabbi. There is no secular marriage. There is no way to get married. There's no way to get divorced.
No justice.
You can't come
no,
and become
no,
an
no
Israeli citizen.
Somewhere?
Yeah, unless the rabbis say that your religion is orthodox enough for us to view you as a Jew based on your religion, you can't even become a citizen of Israel. So it is a it's a real problem. So there was no one willing to serve the role of a nabi, a prophet, and as a result, the rabbis, these rabbis, the Jews, were led so far away. Literally, no one was willing to listen. So as a result of rabbinic Judaism, Jews have lost all contact with and all respect for Yahweh. It is only by walking away from Judaism that Jews might become Yehudim again and once more embody what the name represents. And until Jews cease being Jews and become Yehudim, they will not reengage in a relationship with Yahweh. Now, that is not to disparage an ethnicity, it's to embrace it. Jews must become Yehudim again, beloved of Yah. For them to be reconciled with Yah. Now, earlier in this discussion, Yah explained that he spoke through a Nakar. And, well, now you know why. Why would God need to speak through a foreigner?
That's all you got.
That was all you got. There wasn't a Jew willing to listen. Now, these words could be very disorienting for Jews. To know that God despises rabbis, has called them liars, is a bitter pill to swallow. It means that 2,400 years of Jewish men, women, and children have been lost among these deceptions. The only thing worse would be to continue along their same deviant path away from the truth. Now, if it matters, I share your pain. I was once ensnarled in the midst of Christianity. I was an ordained elder, and I was an evangelist. Mm-hmm. I believed Paul. I led Bible studies on the New Testament. The discovery that I had been played for a fool was traumatic. I was angry. I was angry at the religious, and I was disappointed in myself. I remain apologetic. I am remorseful that during my youth, I was part of the problem. And while I'm sorry, had I not been there, I would not be here. Just all there is to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might be reasonable to assume that because there was no one else willing to do what we have done, to go where Yah's words lead, to impugn their prior religion, to impugn their political views, to impugn patriotism, to say things that the world does not want to hear, that the thought police will have a conniption fit over. And to do so for 10, 12 hours a day, 6-7 days a week for 20 years.
That's
now,
there
weren't a whole lot of people signing up for that gig.
And okay,
so God didn't pick us because of some qualifications. We were chosen by default.
Show up.
And yet, I want to tell you that, but we still had to bring more to the party than just show up. Because
yeah.
it's really hard. It's really hard to oppose something you know nothing about.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely.
And
true.
Had I not been political, had I not been religious, had I not been patriotic, I would not have known how to effectively rebuff those things. And it's enough that God teaches us the truth and teaches us why he hates religion. He really doesn't want to have to go into, okay, here, a dummy. Let me give you a course on rhetoric. Let me give you a case on logic. Let me teach you all about Islam. Let me teach you about Christianity. Let me teach you about Judaism. Let me teach you about politics so that now you understand more effectively and can condemn these things more credibly along with them. That's not what he wants to do. What he wants to do is to teach us the truth so mm-hmm. that we can put ourselves into his message. God doesn't like working alone. He likes people who is going to interject themselves into the messages, by the way, is probably the thing that causes more people to leave our company than anything else. When I interject myself and my viewpoints into the message, but I'm here telling you that if I did not do that, we wouldn't be here.
No.
God's not looking
why,
for a robot. Yeah, he's
well,
not
no,
looking
but...
for a robot. I could go and just say, this is what the translation says. But if I did that, then I'm not doing the job that he called us to do.
No.
The job is
remember
to awaken people, to have them understand why God hates religion, why he hates politics, why you can't be religious and political and be part of his covenant. And so he wants us to explain what's wrong with these things such that we can be tagged by the thought police now, so that we can be more effective witnesses.
May I say something?
Sure.
I'm probably like a lot of people, but I have to confess that I wasn't smart enough to find it. I mean, I knew something was wrong. I could tell you what was wrong, but I didn't know how to dig it out. That was something uniquely wonderful about your book, yada yada, the first time. But I will say that I was smart enough to recognize it when I did see it. And most of the people that I know on a personal basis that we chat with, we know when we encounter it. And now the difference is because of your books and because of the helpful way you allow us to, and the way you write it so we can check these things out, and with the knowledge of how to, what to find, lexicons and so forth to dig it out, we know how to prove it.
Correct.
It's not just saying, gosh, you know, he said he's pretty smart and he's got it all done. No, let me show you why. Using the same tools everybody else uses.
God's not celebrating what we're doing because one or two people got it. He's celebrating what we're doing is because we enable countless people to get it. That's
right.
Why he's celebrating
this. They're going to find it. Yeah.
Right. Now, I understand that that some people read these books with a dictionary sitting nearby, and others just look at it and say, oh, my God, can't you just simplify it? Well, you know, Molly created Molly created yada, yada for littles.
Well,
it does simplify it, and it's
but,
beautifully done, and it's a treasure.
Once you know that, you want to go deeper.
And, of course, now
we
link to it now from the new website, by the way.
Fine.
I keep that tab up of the new website. I am so pleased with what David and Jackie have been able to do on that. It is so beautifully done.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for making it available to the world. But the fact of the matter is God likes working through people, and just like Yeshayah and Zechariah and Malachi and even Habakkuk. You know, remember Habakkuk is saying, what's wrong with them? God, you can't die.
Can you do that? Did you hear what they said? Don't even look.
Yeah. Well, so God likes it when we interject. Now, I understand there's a big difference between interjecting as a witness and interjecting as a prophet. But I also understand that interjecting as a prophet requires a great deal more decorum and precision than interjecting as a witness. If I interject as a witness and I'm wrong, I have the opportunity to go back and correct it, and it's not a death sentence. If I interject as a prophet,
I'm wrong. You lied.
That's a death sentence.
Not a good approach. If it was okay for
the prophets, and they have to be precise, I'm pretty confident that Yahweh is good with us doing it. You know, one place would be that God is nearly as opposed to conspiracy as he is to religion. So we'll spend a lot of time condemning conspiracy. One of the problems is that not only are Jews and Israel the principal people and nation blamed through conspiracy. Probably, many of them just get right down to blame the Jews. Even COVID-19 now, they're blaming it on the Jews. And it's just so inappropriate to continually to blame God's people, particularly when God says, you know, if you're going to curse my people, I'm going to curse you. So it's a really, really dumb idea to be conspiratorial. But my issue with conspiracy is that most conspiracies are so stupid, so easily disproven, that even to be around such people is this giant credibility cesspool. So we speak against it. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes to politics, while I don't vote and I'm not aligned with any party, and I'm not going to support a candidate, I do have a political viewpoint. And what I've tried to do is to have my political viewpoint be as closely aligned with Yahweh as possible. And Yahweh does not like government. And so if there is a choice between less government or more government, I'm always going to side with less. Do away with the military. Do away with the welfare state. Do away with federal controls over education. Do away with having lifelong representation in politics. Less government is better. It's not that less government is good government. It's just less bad than more government. So we will speak of politics in that regard, and of course we'll do the proper thing, which is to expose against them both political parties when they do things that are stupid. Yeah. So again, I understand your pain. I've been there. I've made these mistakes. It was disorienting, but I can tell you, if you are a Jew and you're listening to this and you want to become a Yehudim and you're disoriented that the rabbis have lied to you, there is no better feeling than finally pushing on past it. When you finally can reject your religion and understand how it was wrong across the board, and then you come to know what God actually said and what he's offering and who he is and what he is like, and you get to know him, it's like the weight of the world is removed from you, and you've been free to soar through time, space, and dimensions and enjoy enlightenment. And it's such an extraordinary experience. So it is uplifting. It is empowering. It is liberating. It's enlightening. So once I became aware of the truth, I realized that a horrible burden had been lifted from me, just as it will be from you. For the first time in my life, I was receptive to Yahweh, and at long last, I could go to the place where Yahweh's words led, although I'm having a little trouble with the 64th chapter of Yashayah, the 63rd, my wife is telling me.
I don't want to go.
Who brought this to me and then chastised me for saying, Oh, you who is always fearlessly going where the words lead, you found some words that make you uncomfortable.
I'll get there.
Give me time.
You are human, you know. You're allowed to do that.
Give me time. It's an accolade that I am just not worthy of accepting and don't want to accept. Okay, so joy, my life, replaced sorrow. Darkness was swallowed up by the light. The same opportunity awaits Jews en route to becoming Yehudim again. Religion continues to be the greatest obstacle to knowing Yahweh. And since Yahweh wants his people to know him, he is being forthright in exposing and condemning Judaism. This is Yeshaya 57:12. I will correctly recount your work, accurately portraying your customs and practices, but it will not be to your benefit. Ouch! I will correctly recount your work. I'm going to correctly portray your customs and your practices, but you ain't going to like it.
You know what that is, though, right?
What?
I mean, you know that's right now, by hearing that, we're fulfilling a prophecy. Who else is doing this?
Yeah, I guess we are. Yes.
Yeah. This is real time now.
Yeah, it's real time. But I just think it's just so Yahweh. Yeah. Hey, boys, little boys out there, you guys are playing religion out there. Understand? I know what you wrote, I'm going to recount your own words.
But you ain't gonna like it.
You just not gonna like it very much. It isn't going to be to your benefit. I sit in this chair from morning to night because I enjoy Yahweh's words. I mean, I just love what he has to say, and so it's a real pleasure to translate it and learn and say, well, that was clever, God, that was pretty impressive, and you know, I would hope that in a quiet moment, so, you know, eternity is a real long time, so. I'm sure that Jan and I will be able to have a chat here and there. That's just a private chat about what we did together. And I would really hope that God would say, you know, I will correctly recount your work, and I'm going to accurately portray what you had to say. And you know, I think you're going to enjoy that. Yeah,
I think the
goal ought to be the opposite of what Yahweh just said about rabbinic Judaism.
I get it.
So Yeshaya is addressing those who claim that they are righteous, that they are right, that they are just, that they are justified. Oh, yeah, they love to call themselves righteous among his people. Therefore, this remains a focused attack by God on rabbis and Judaism. To condemn them and repudiate their religion, Yahweh will tell the truth about them. In fact, that is what he's doing right now. You're right. We are fulfilling a prophecy.
Yeah.
Nothing is, by the way, fulfilling a prophecy, it can be good and it can be bad. You know? It all depends on what the problem is.
Yeah, I got that too. I figured that out too, yeah. I'm a little slow. I'm from Alabama.
Nothing is more caustic to religious beliefs than Yahweh's testimony when it is accurately presented. Every rabbi, every pope, every cardinal and bishop, every imam and pastor, every priest, along with many politicians and teachers, will be exposed in this way, hung by their own words and deeds. We had a dinner earlier this week, and there's a young lady here that we've befriended, and she has the coolest daughter in the history of preteen girls. This girl is such a class act and has so much style. So she was talking about how one of her classmates wants to be as a girl, but she only wants to be referred to by masculine pronouns. So everybody in the class has been told this is part of the new non-binary approach, and that out of respect for her, that they should not say her, but now out of respect for him, even though she is still continuing to be a girl and says, I am a girl, I just want you to refer to me as he and him. And so she was talking about this as if non-binary, you know, was a as a fact, and how we have progressed and giving people respect. And I said, that's utter and complete nonsense. She can choose to call herself a mushroom if she wishes to. If she wants to pretend that she's green, that's just fine. Whatever she wants to do is up to her. But to ask you to lie is not appropriate. To ask you to respect that choice is not appropriate, because transgender as a choice shortens one's life, makes a life miserable. Those who are transgender, and unfortunately, I know more than my share, and know more than my share of families who are dealing with this. There aren't enough psychiatrists on the planet to try to remedy the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so it shortens one's life. It almost certainly makes a person miserable in their life. It is not something we should respect. It's a very bad decision. And so we ought not be asked to lie.
To support it.
Should not be asked to look at who is clearly a girl and say, I understand you want to be called a boy. I don't think it is appropriate for a girl to go into the boys' locker room or the boys' bathroom. I don't think it's appropriate for a boy to go into the girls'. I don't think it's appropriate for a man to dress like a girl so that he can prey on girls or prey on guys, fool them.
Mm-hmm.
These are deceitful things. Listen, I don't give a hoot. If somebody is lesbian or bi or gay, that means squat to me. Do not care. I don't think God cares, to tell you the truth. I think the two passages that have been attributed against homosexuality are very poorly translated. They have really nothing to do with homosexuality.
Yeah.
So I don't think God cares. The only thing God doesn't like is don't lie. Don't deceive people about such things. And so when we told her these things and that her teachers were deceiving her when they were talking about non-binary, that there is more than two genders. In humans, there are only two genders. You're either male or female. There is no such thing as changed or neuter or, you know, we're celebrating an Olympics where the news can't wait to tell you how a transgender athlete, some dude posing as a woman, won some competition. No, that's a dude with testosterone flowing through his veins, pretending to be a woman, taking a medal away from a woman.
Yes.
We ought not be celebrating this. This isn't inclusion. It's stupid. It's wrong. So, listen, as I say, if somebody chooses they want to hug a tree, that's just fine. If they choose that they want to be homosexual, that's just fine. They could, as far as I'm concerned, they can be trisexual. I swear that some days that Asher is trisexual. Asher is a lover. Asher loves everybody. And most everybody loves Asher. And I think Asher would be do interspecies, which is a no-no, Asher, no interspecies. But, whatever you do on your own is just fine.
It's free will, yeah.
But don't impose your decisions, particularly if you're asking someone to lie or you're misleading someone. Don't ask them to endorse or respect those decisions.
Mm. That's
where where we get to be wrong. Now, for those of you who have read them, you know that this is how Prophet of Doom and Questioning Paul were composed. What I did is I held the founders of those religions to their words. I simply said, this is what you said. You're not going to like it very much, but this is what he said. You're not going to like it very much, but this is what he said. That is how Questioning Paul and Prophet of Doom were written. And so I understand God's technique here. The best way to prove that Islam is wrong is to quote the Islamic scriptures. The best way to prove that Paul was wrong is to quote the Christian New Testament and the books that he wrote. That's the most effective way. So what God is saying is, I'm going to accurately reflect what you said. You're just not going to like it very much. Prophet of Doom, Muslims hate it. It's a precisely accurate presentation of what Muhammad said and did. Questioning Paul is a comprehensive evaluation of what Paul said and did. It's just that
preachers hate that, too.
They don't like it very much.
No.
Now, there may be a less damning fate awaiting those who have justified the unjustifiable without having become aware that their representations of God are inaccurate. The best, they will, at best, they will have their souls destroyed at the end of their counterproductive lives. But it should be noted that it is unlikely that a person would reach the level of rabbi, pastor, preacher, imam, mentor, spokesman, politician, or professor, and have done so much without realizing somewhere along the way that there were serious flaws and inconsistencies in the system they were advocating. And that's really important. There's a reason that progressives now, the most liberal of liberals, the socialists verging on communists, there's a reason that they have disbanded the use of logic or reason, where they discredit evidence as not having any value anymore. There's a reason that they go along with political correctness, which is universally invalid. And the reason is that the truth
won't stand up to scrutiny.
Yeah, it's just exceedingly destructive to their belief systems. You know, if you're for big government, all you have to do is compare East and West Berlin, North and South Korea, Western Europe versus Eastern Europe. What life is like in Taiwan versus what life is like in China. It's not hard. It's exceedingly easy. If you want a religious state and you want to live where your religion and your God are preeminent, well, go live in an Islamic country. Tell me how much you like it. So the world as a whole, particularly the religious and progressives, have abandoned evidence and reason because they don't like the truth. Yet most continue.
You know, I had a
I
just had a friend one time, and he was just dying the world, turning into a communist. And I said, fine, if that's what you want to be. It's, you know, you allow that. The Constitution allows you to believe what you want. But but he was a salesman, and he was an importer of art supplies, and he went to China. He left there for 6 or 7 months. And when he came back, he said, I've given up communism. He said, I can't live like this.
Yeah. And what's interesting, while the Chinese government is communist,
there's prior to,
because of the dictatorial nature of centralized power, massive government, and the most liberal use of government ultimately would be a communist country. The problem, of course, or the interesting thing about China is that, and I was part of this, the first enterprise zones that were opened outside of Hong Kong. The Chinese decided outside of Hong Kong, while Hong Kong was still independent of China, still part of the lease, that they would accept an experiment in this one little tiny area of an enterprise zone where Taiwanese nationals and other businessmen could invest capital and actually own the factories and make a profit and sell their goods without any communist control for enterprise. And it was the Wild West of free enterprise. And that first enterprise zone, which I had offices in, factories in, was there all the time, it was so extraordinarily successful that the next year there were 10 of them. And the year after that, there were 100 of them. And the years after that, there were 500 and 1,000 and then thousands of them. And now, with the exception of agriculture, the reason that China has become the fastest growing economy in the world and will soon be the world's largest economy and the world's economic manufacturing engine is because economically China runs on free enterprise. So it's got free enterprise as an economic system and then the draconian effects of centralized government and dictatorship and communism over all that and total indoctrination and a complete deprivation of freedom. So it's, you know, the world is an interesting place if you just study it. But your friend went over there during the enterprise zone time and still couldn't handle it.
No. He freaked out.
Yeah, I mean, the things that were just so stark is that you'd go to a place like Romania, which was communist at the time, and then go across the border and go into Western Europe, which was free. And it was like 100 years transpired before your eyes. The Pale was so oppressive. Now, I spent a lot of time in the Soviet Union when it was the Soviet Union, went all the way across the country from east to west, north to south. And so I got a pretty good eyeful as to how communists turn men and women into gods. And, of course, the lure in academia, teachers are universally liberal. And the reason they're liberal is they buy into the rhetoric of communism, which is that the most enlightened lead. But that's never how it works. They get the teachers and the professors to support it because they say, you know, the most enlightened, you'll rise to power. And, of course, the teachers have never had any power because they've never done anything but to teach. And so they buy into it, thinking, oh, well, we'll be revered. We'll be at the highest end of the society as opposed to the lowest end. But what's the first thing that a communist country does when the thugs come to power? They kill the intellectuals. They kill them all.
No.
So you've got to be stupid as
so
a teacher
ahead,
if you can't figure it out, that if you get what you want, you're dead.
Yeah, they silence you one way or the other, so you got to be careful what you say, and it defeats the purpose. Yeah.
So nonetheless, the liberals, the religious, they continue to – and by the way, I didn't mention conservatives, but conservatives in today's world, there's no one really that is a conservative, but those who parade around as conservative have got to be some of the biggest nincompoops in the history of humankind. I mean, these guys that rally around Trump, God, I think if they did have three brain cells that functioned, two of them are on vacation. The third is taking a nap. Nobody is willing to surrender the social. You know, my goal is to have Elia look down one day and say, "Hey,
hey
I like that
funny.
Guy.
I'll say I'll use that line.
Yeah, I like that guy. I like him. Oh yes, one of these days. My dream is to be a pre. You know." If I could win the and I'm not by winning, if the three guys that I look up to the most, if in passing they say, hey, yeah, that guy, he was all right. Dode, of course, because, you know, I've got a bromance on Dode. I think Dode's the coolest dude in the history of dudes. So, Dode, it would be You know, if sometime in the entirety of your of eternity, if Dodd would say, "Hey, you know, I know who you are. You said some pretty cool stuff." If
really?
That's to be done with, you know, I'd melt into the pavement and probably not come out for 1,000 years. But nonetheless, that'd be cool. I feel, yeah. I mean, the man tugs at my heart because I understand what it's like to have the most impassioned message in the world, to know the answer, to be able to deliver your own people and then not have them listen, only to know in the end that it all works out. And so I just dearly love Yasha. Yeah. And I guess Elia would be a cool pension just because. Guy was so funny and so righteous.
You'd have a nice foursome or a fivesome.
Yeah, that's right. It'd be a nice foursome. Well, I'm not going to play on that. They're in a different league. No, I'm not trying to say I'm just trying to say it'd be cool, you know, just to get, Doe's going to be the head dude for eternity. And eternity is a really long time. If 3 seconds of eternity, you would say, I remember you. It'd be cool. I'm not asking for much. I'm the guy that had the bromance on you. For the souls who have waited too long to choose Yahweh over the rabbis, who have become too comfortable relying upon one another. This is what Yahweh says. And we'll end here and probably pick it up here again this time next week as we're recording but not broadcasting. When you finally cry out for help, let your assemblies and what you have accepted save you. When you finally cry out for help, when the time comes, when you wail in agony and you summon for assistance, when you finally offer a proclamation to gather together, let your assemblies and what you have accepted save you. Let your accumulation of things, your companions, your convocations, your holidays, what you have received and assumed to be true, let it deliver you. God said you went too long. Every one of these meaningless and futile things, as if they were a fleeting breath, the Spirit will grasp hold of and carry away. But the one who takes refuge in me will inherit the land and will become an heir to my set-apart mountain. So if you are a political Jew, if you are a religious Jew, and you finally, in the end, the anti-Semitism becomes too great, the floodgates of Muslims coming into Israel to wipe you out to the last, the rocket attacks from Hezbollah, when it becomes too much and you finally say, "Oh, God, save us." Hey, God's going to say, "No, let's
talk to the God you loved."
Talk to the politician that you love. Talk to the rabbi you love. Let your shit save you. See how that worked for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's going to say. It was all rubbish to me. You paid me no attention. And now in your darkest hour, you're still not mentioning my name. And you reach out to me like I'm supposed to save you. No. You banked on your beliefs. Let them save you. However, if you're willing to listen to Yahweh, if you're willing to embrace what he said, if you're willing to let go of all of those who have held you down, the one who takes refuge in Yahweh, not in the rabbis, the one who seeks Yahweh's protection, trusting and relying upon Yahweh to keep him and her safe, they will inherit the land and become heir to my set-apart mountain. I want to tell you, you want to be an heir to the set-apart mountain because everything cool is going to take place on the ridgeline, the Sion of Moriah.
Mm-hmm.
That is where it's all going to be happening. Yahweh's going to have this glorious home there. One of the things I found out, as I didn't know, is that we're actually going to contribute to building it. Well, certainly, Yehudim and Israelites are. Yeah, I had always thought that, you know, just God comes here. Here's my my new house. It can be a, you know, a house of crystal and light and everything. And no, Yahweh says, no. We're all going to build it together. I'm gonna give Dodd the opportunity to do what he wanted to do. And we're going to build it together. Oh, by the way,
cool.
We're going to get to it on Kippurim. Boy, oh boy, did I ever miss it, and is it ever profound? Yahweh told us that the reason that Dodd couldn't build his house was that he mm-hmm. had blood on his hands.
That's
what he said. He said that's the reason.
Yeah.
Do you know that when Yahweh is talking through Zechariah about the high priest Yosha and saying, okay, I understand he's a scallywag, and the guys around him are even bigger scallywags. And nonetheless, we're going to dress him up and clean him up and
right.
the like, because there's a really important role for
yeah.
Kippurim to take place. There's a whole series of sprinkling blood from the tips of your fingers on that mercy seat. And somebody's
mm-hmm.
got to be ready to do that for me to honor my Torah and fulfill Kippurim. And so we're told this. That's why the story of Zechariah 4 exists. And so you say, okay, wow, still, why Yosha's name? Well, because Yosha was the high priest, when the
yeah.
house was rebuilt after the Babylonian captivity.
Oh,
so that's why his name is built. So you're going to say, okay, so what does God care about a high priest? He doesn't. I mean, he's going to reestablish the priesthood, but he doesn't. What he cares about is fulfilling the Torah's explanation of what happens on Kippurim. And Kippurim is explained very early on. It's explained with Yahweh telling Aaron. You know when Aaron had the
mm-hmm.
his dim-witted moment? He
yes.
he participated and he pulled his calf, the bull.
Mm-hmm.
So God
yeah.
said, all right. So with Aaron, for Aaron to get clean, because right now Aaron's a joke, we're going to sacrifice, guess what? What did Aaron build? A bull. Oh, yeah. So
yeah.
we're going to sacrifice a bull. And he's going to, just for him and only for him, he's going to sprinkle some of the bull's blood on that mercy seat from the tip of his fingers. That is just so that he can perform this role, because boy is way over fixated on religious bulls. And then he says, we're going to take a scapegoat. We're going to get a goat. And not a lamb, but a goat.
No.
And for the people, we're going to sprinkle some of that blood on the mercy seat of the covenant. Do you know what the mercy seat of the covenant is called?
The Kippurim?
Yes. You know what the basis of the word is? The only thing that's different between it and Kippurim? Kippurim is plural.
It's a covering.
And Kippurim means all things pertaining to reconciliations. It's the same damn word.
Fair enough. Yeah.
And so for Yahweh to fulfill Kippurim, what he needs is somebody who is acceptable to sprinkle some of that goat's blood on the mercy seat, because that's what he said is there to reconcile my people back to me. Well, guess
mm-hmm.
who's going to be doing it? The man who had blood on his hands. Dodd. And then right after Dodd does it, he gets to lead the construction of the temple with us helping.
Cool.
Oh, it's so cool. The way that story comes together and why it's told the way it is, yeah, it's really cool. the prophecies of Zechariah are illuminated. Of course, in Zechariah, the next chapter is about the two witnesses. And I went through and finally was able to translate the symbolism in those was always a challenge. And until about a month ago, I was just dumbfounded. I said, oh, gosh, I'm going to skip this again because no one can figure this one out. This time it was matter of fact, just all the pieces fell into place and came to understand why there's two witnesses and who the two witnesses are and what's transpiring around them. And so those witnesses, one of the things that they do is make ready, level out the path, make straight the path to Yahweh. That's what that prophecy is all about, because Yahweh is about ready to return. And they speak volumes also about Dod and the role that he's going to play, because Dod is actually going to be not only the king, he's going to be dressed in the priestly. He's going to be dressed in the priestly robes. I don't know if he'll be called a high priest. I don't think it matters.
He's going to be dressed
in the priestly attire, and he's going to perform that function for us.
Good.
It's very, very cool. So here we are. We've got when Jews finally call out for help, God's going to say, nope. Turn to your oral Torah. Turn to your Mishneh Torah. Turn to your Talmud. Turn to your Babylonian Talmud, and find a remedy in there. I'm sure that that'll work out just swell for you.
But he's still giving them a way out. I mean, he that's the most caustic thing he said so far, in my opinion. You know, because it's so sarcastic. You know, like, so turn to the God you like and have him save you.
That's exactly what he's saying.
But then he says, "Okay, but still,
those who do,
the right
there's
thing,
an alternative here,
follow
and
me,
I want you to know so that those of you who choose to rely on me, take refuge in me, seek protection from me, Yahweh, that you will inherit the land. You're going to become an heir to my set apart mountain, which is Mount Moriah, where it's all happening, man." That is the place you want to be. I cannot imagine. I have imagined in my eyes what happens when the earthquake occurs and splits from east to west, and water wells up through the Mount of Olives, and it's going to flow right around through the Kidron and Himmon Valley, and as it does, it's going to rush all the way down to the sea, and both seas. It will also fill the Dead Sea, so it's no longer dead. While at the same time, it creates this most spectacular water feature going down from the Mount of Olives, and I think it's going to go right through the existing Temple Mount. So there'll just be this beautiful river of water and light that will be between Dod's house and Yahweh's house, and this bridge of light that will be between them, and these beautiful signs of Zion posted along the way, and this mountain that is now surrounded by serene beauty and waterfalls soaring trees, as Yahweh says, with all of the brambles gone and all of the religious rubbish vaporized. It's literally going to turn it all to goo that's just gone and swallowed up by the earth. So now Jerusalem has Dod's house, Yahweh's house, and these beautiful places to live and celebrate the relationship without any pollution, without any religion, without any politics, without any militarism, without any patriotism. It's just going to be marvelous. So that's what he says, is that there is the opportunity for you to walk away from rabbinic Judaism and inherit all that Yah has to offer. So with that, let's pick it up this time next week. This is I think this is still wonderful material. I know that
absolutely
that it's it isn't fun for most people to hear, and probably impossible for most people to talk about the condemnation of religion, particularly Judaism, with all the implications if you're condemning Judaism that you must be an anti-Semite or something. And so this is a place that most people don't want to go. But Yahweh took us here. We're telling you what Yahweh revealed. Yahweh took us here. And we would be doing him and his people a disservice if we didn't share it. And understands the most compassionate thing we can do is the most compassionate thing Yahweh can do. Because if you don't leave it, then the answer is, I'm going to recite it all back to you. You're not going to like it very much. Yeah. If you call on me while you're still mired in that rubbish, I'm going to tell you, we'll find a page in your rubbish. Maybe it'll save you. So the most compassionate thing we can do for Jews is help them become Yehudim again. Reintroduce them to Yahweh.
Yes.
So this is actually this is actually good news. It is a wonderfully happy story because all the religious Jews give up is religious Jews. That's all they're giving up. And they're gaining the universe.
Look what you gain. Yeah, yeah. Gosh, look what you gain.
Enlightenment, freedom. Great joy. You can actually love a woman and respect her without having to humiliate her. What a thought. You can work and be proud of what you're accomplishing. You can say your God's name, and you can recognize that your God's name is emblazoned into your name.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. You know that, but
pick up right where you left off, and you know God's saying at the end, you know, everyone's going to be a prophet. Well, of course, because you're going to have all these Yehudim there, and they're all going to be loving and knowing Yah, be available for him to work through. I mean, I'm quite confident that if there were 1,000 people like Moshe, God would work through all 1,000 of them. If there were, I don't know, 100 goats out there, he had to work through 100 goats. You know, if there were 75 Yashayas, we'd have heard from all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And one day there will be, thanks to Yashayah, thanks to Dod, thanks to Moshe. There will be. Thanks to Yahusha, playing the role of the Pesach Eyal. It's such a wonderful contribution. Well, thank you all. Go to yadayah.com. Check out the books that are all free on the site. Follow the link to the printed books at Amazon. I would encourage you to buy them and then write your thoughts about them so that others might be encouraged to buy them. They are beautiful. I have them all everywhere in my home and my study. They're you can't walk any place in my home, basically.
True.
And not see.
I can attest to that. That's true.
Yes, sets of them, you know, it is with every one of them. I look over and it's motivation.
Yeah, I hear you.
It's one thing to be this devoted and invest this amount of time. It's another to enjoy the fruit of that effort, to see it. And so that's why I say I must look at the Yada Yah site as it has been redone with all those books on the bookshelf and all the links in it. I must do it 4 or 5 times a day.
Yeah.
Because it's motivation.
It's impressive.
There's a sense of satisfaction, which is all the things that Yahweh wants us to feel. This is what we are not trying to pretend in any way that things wouldn't be better if we were retired and there were hundreds and thousands of Yehudim doing this. We'd be the happiest guys in the world. We'd be off celebrating.
Yeah.
So
truly,
Don't let the fact that we're doing this keep you from it. Please join us. Retire us even better. Then, you know, our study will be probably still study as much as we do. It's just that we'll do it for personal use and sharing with our friends. So I would encourage you to jump in. It's the most wonderful job in the world. And it is long past time that Jews become Yehudim again and turn to the Torah and turn to Yahweh and become part of the covenant. You'll love it. Well, may Yah bless. Look forward to being with you next week. Thank you so much, Kirk. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Good night.
Thank you,
good night, y'all.
Good night.